My name's Sarah Newbold, and I'm the practice director at Progressive Therapeutic Collective. We're based in Boorloo, and we provide counselling and therapeutic support to a range of people across Australia. We're a queer-owned practice, and very proudly so. And we have a gender-diverse team, and we also work with many gender-diverse clients. My pronouns are she, her, and I am a cisgender queer woman.
Thanks, Sarah. So to start, could you explain what gender diversity is and how has accessibility to care as well as societal awareness attributed to the rise in those who identify under the umbrella that expands beyond a binary?
So, gender diversity, there's no set definition for gender diversity, but traditionally, gender has been seen as a binary with male and female, which are social constructs. And fortunately, now we have access to a lot more information and resources, largely thanks to the internet and social media. And we now have a growing awareness and understanding that gender is indeed diverse and it exists beyond the binary. Some people refer to gender as a spectrum. I think that can also be a little bit limiting as well. I think it's just gender can be many things to many people. And I hesitate to give a too specific definition for gender diversity because I think that places limitations. And particularly as a cisgender woman, I don't think it's my place to do that. Having an increase in access to information, I think, has really assisted many, many people to understand some of the challenges and difficulties they may have experienced in understanding who they are, their gender, and their identity. And I think that's largely why we have seen an increase in people perhaps identifying outside of the traditional binary. There are some, I'd say, particularly in the right wing of politics, that attribute it to sort of like a form of social contagion. I very strongly disagree with this. I don't think at all that existing outside of the gender binary is a choice. And I say that because people who are gender diverse or exist outside of the traditional binary face extensive or can face extensive discrimination and stigma, and there is a lot of challenge associated with it. And I don't think that would be a choice for anyone. But fortunately, we do have an increase in services and an increase in awareness. And my hope is as the community starts to gain more understanding, that there will be more love and acceptance.
This is growing, but how materially has that acceptance, particularly within the medical field? So I'm talking like psychiatrists, endocrinologists, plastic surgeons, clinical psychologists, and counselors such as yourself. How is that attributed to the affirmation of gender for all these people that are within the non-linear and incredibly beautiful expression that is discovering their gender identity?
In the medical and therapeutic community, I think we are at the really at the beginning stages in many ways of understanding gender diversity, and reports are that most services currently in the mainstream are not gender affirming, and that access to mental health support, to specialist psychiatry, to specialist surgeons, is really limited. Wait lists are really long and costs are generally high and prohibitive. So I think there's a lot of work to be done in this space. And I will give an example. Recently, I was working with a transgender client who had a lot of concerns about accessing very important medical intervention for a personal health issue, and was so reluctant to go to hospital because of the fear of how they would be treated. So, because of their gender identity. I think, yeah, there's a lot more work to be done.
So, given the amount of emotional labor that goes into the process of diagnoses, counseling, and assessment for a person who has found any form of affirmation in their true identity, what damage do stories such as that which was provided by Channel 7 pose on those people, given statistically the people that they did represent on that only make up? I read varying statistics, but it was between 1% and 3% at most.
Yeah, as a mental health professional, I felt incredibly despondent when I saw the reports regarding Channel 7 News and the spotlight feature regarding gender and their detransitioning process. And you're exactly right with your statistics. Recent studies have shown that 97% of people have been very happy with their gender transition, and 1 to 2%. Or 1 to 3% have not been perhaps as happy. But I think there's a lot of complexity and nuance within that 3% as well, which hasn't been captured in the spotlight story. And that largely is the reasons why some people haven't been happy and have chosen to detransition. And a lot of it can be due to that. There was a recent study in the US that said 33% of people who had chosen to detransition did so because of pressure from their parents. Next to that was they found the process of transition really challenging and too expensive. The third reason was due to harassment and discrimination that they faced in the community. And the final one was due to employment concerns, and particularly in the context of a cost of living crisis as well. Yeah, to see that feature on Channel 7 News, I thought was incredibly damaging. I made a submission to Channel 7 and asked them to remove all promotion and all material related to that feature because I thought it was damaging, and it was also reported by people that I know that were featured. Images of them and video content that had been displayed without their consent. And it was also grossly misrepresented. The people that were shown were indeed very happy with their gender transition, yet they were demonstrated as perhaps not being happy. So it was a gross misrepresentation. And to demonstrate anyone without their consent or authorization, is deeply unethical and unsafe.
The story also very much targeted social media platforms as if to paint them as a core factor in the rise of transness. So, in your experience, how likely is someone to go down a path of seeking medical care or counseling after merely seeing a TikTok from a person who may identify as transgender? And is it not more likely that these videos spark a connection or a want of awareness into one's own dysphoria and perhaps provide them with the confidence to seek professional help and guidance?
Absolutely. I think social media can potentially be fantastic and can give people some insight into a broad range of life experiences. And accessing therapy to perhaps start discussing things around gender and sexuality and identity can be a really positive thing. I think, as I mentioned earlier, this sense of particularly from the right wing or conservative media, that social media can cause a social contagion effect, sort of making people want to gender transition after watching a TikTok video, I think is absolutely absurd. Yeah, I really applaud those who share their lived experience on social media because I know for a fact many get a lot of flack from conservatives and face a lot of discrimination and abuse. And so I think they're incredibly brave in sharing their stories and to be applauded for doing so.
The story argued from some parents' perspectives as well, but this actually isn't uncommon, is it, that parents struggle to accept their child's gender that they brought into the world, that their child's sex at birth is somehow intrinsic to their ability to love their child. How damaging is giving a platform to this perspective?
I think it's incredibly damaging, and rates of anxiety, depression, trauma, and also suicide within the gender diverse community are high, and that is largely attributed to negative pressure from families and from the community. And I mean, at the end of the day, don't we all want to just be seen, loved, and accepted for who we are by our parents or by our primary caregivers and by our families and by our community? And the hate that is spewed by bigots has no place in any of our media. And I think it was disgusting that Channel 7 gave this a platform.
Do you think that these videos potentially embolden transphobic and hateful people in their attitudes? And how reductive is it for programs such as Channel 7 to put this on spotlight? I know you said that you have put forward letters and others also did the same, as well as petitions to have the video removed. I know that Channel 7 did put a retraction and removed the images that they did not have consent for. But is their damage not already been done by airing this video, and it is still available to be restreamed? And does it not raise larger questions as to the position of the actual producers at Channel 7 and how incredibly out of touch they are?
Absolutely. I think you're spot on in everything that you've said, and it's staggering that it made it onto any public platform. And like you said, whilst some images and some content has been removed, it is largely too late. A lot of damage has already been done, and a large number of people deeply impacted, particularly those who were shown in the videos, and who didn't provide consent. I mean, there is potential risk to their privacy, to their confidentiality, and to their safety and to their well-being. I would like to see how Channel 7 is going to address that and potentially compensate that. I think that would be a very fair and reasonable thing for them to do, yet we've heard nothing of that. Also, their reporting isn't in line with current statistics. As we said before, 97% of people are happy and content and feel safe with the decisions that they have made in regards to their gender transition. So I think giving a platform to spread information is unethical.
There are a lot of people who are within the trans and gender diverse community who couldn't actually bring themselves to watch this episode. The trailer alone was quite traumatic for a lot of people. So, what support can people provide people who may have become triggered or traumatized by this being put out there?
I think the cisgender community really needs to stand up and advocate for transgender, non-binary, and gender diverse people as a starting point. It's unfair and unreasonable for us to expect that gender diverse people have to not only engage with this sort of content, deal with the emotional impact of that, and then also advocate for themselves and educate other people. So I would encourage all people, but particularly cisgender people, to educate themselves, to advocate. And if they hear people or see people spreading in misinformation, to pull them up on it and say that it's not okay. I would then also recommend that if you know of someone who has been impacted in any way, is just to simply ask how they're going and what sort of support it is that they feel like they might need, and whether that is just someone to vent to or have a conversation with. If therapy is accessible, then that can also be a good option. In saying that, sadly, wait lists for therapy are ridiculous at the moment. Wait lists can be up to 6 months to a year. So I think we really rely on community in instances like this. And it's about us coming together and providing support to each other. And support, I think, is simply just trying to be loving and kind and compassionate and caring. I would really like to encourage other mental health professionals, whether it be psychologists, social workers, counsellors, who are working in this space as well, to step up and do some more advocacy. I really don't see a lot of it. And we are at the forefront of this. We are working with people who are deeply impacted. We have a voice, we need to use it, and I would encourage everyone to make submissions, to write publicly about this, and to talk about it more on social media so that their clients know that they are supported and cared for, and that services are indeed safe and non-discriminatory. And if services don't have an understanding really of gender and sexuality and identity, I would really strongly encourage them to spend a little bit of money and engage in training, particularly in training delivered by those with lived experience. To those who have been impacted personally, all I can say is I am deeply sorry. We are doing everything we can within our local community here to raise awareness, to educate, and to provide support where we can. I would remind everyone that you are worthy, you are loved, and you are important, and we care deeply about you.